know we have some folks traveling and some folks having family for the weekend, and we used to be able to use these opportunities to talk about those that weren't here. But now we've got the online thing, and that's out the window, so we'll be in 1 Samuel chapter 19 to start off with today. A handful of years ago, my wife and I were introduced to the joys of house hunting for the first time. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, because that's been a huge blessing, but I'm also going to complain for a minute. We did everything, you know, leading up to that. We checked over our finances. We had a bunch of discussions about what was a priority and what we were looking for and what we were hoping for and dreaming about. And, you know, then came the stage where you're rearranging your schedule so that you can view a bunch of places, and you're driving here and there for a couple of solid weeks just looking at stuff. And this is actually kind of a picture of what our house looked like the first time that we saw it. And, you know, there's this moment in that house hunting process that almost makes it worth it. And it's that moment when you step into a place and there's something inside that just feels right. And you start picturing yourself actually living there as you walk around. And you start to play around in your mind with where you would put the different pieces of furniture and what it would be like to sit on that porch and watch a sunrise or a sunset. And internally, something just whispers, man, this is it. The search is over. We found it. After all, you're standing in the house. You can picture exactly how it's going to work out. Except that's probably not how it's going to work out. And there's offers to be made and negotiated, and there's inspections to be done, and there's repairs to ask for, and more inspections to be done, and paperwork, and signing, and the move itself, and packing, and that's assuming everything goes well. Why am I talking about this? Because to me, it's an example of a fairly common occurrence for us that happens when we have some sort of end or goal in mind, and then we slowly come to realize that that's much farther away than we probably ever thought it was. Maybe this has happened to you. The picture that comes to my mind is, you're running a half marathon and you're almost to the end, only to realize you accidentally signed up for the full marathon. And there can be these feelings in that moment of disappointment, of defeat, of just wanting to give up. And you may have questions for God. God, why is this taking so long? Why is this being so difficult? I mean, you're God. Surely it doesn't have to be this complicated, right? Why do you seem to be taking me the long way around? It's as if God has you on the scenic route. Except if you're honest, you kind of hate the scenery. Today we're going to be looking at the life of David, because I think there's a lot about David that kind of embodies this sort of long-suffering expectation. God's going to be taking David on quite a journey, and it would be so easy along the way for David to become disappointed, to feel defeated. But he's going to choose another way. He's going to choose to focus on God's presence, on God's faithfulness. So our main point today, we just have one, so if it sounds like I'm saying the same thing a bunch of different ways, it's because I am. But our main point today, when our goal is communion with God, the right path is always the one He guides us down, no matter how long or difficult. So let's go ahead and pray, and we'll get into it. Lord, thank You just for our time together. Thank You for just each and every opportunity to gather together, to live out life with one another, just to be connected to you and as a body. Lord, I pray that especially this week our prayers would just continue to be with one another, with those who aren't able to make it this weekend. And this morning, would our hearts and our minds just be open to your word and your spirit. Lord, work in us as you do. In your son's name I pray, amen. So, let's go ahead and at least set the scene a little bit. So we've got David, youngest of eight brothers. And probably as a result is a little overlooked. Except he's not overlooked by God. And God sends the prophet Samuel to anoint him as king of Israel. And this happens when David is a teenager. I can't imagine that kind of pressure being put on your shoulders as a teenager, right? You're one day going to lead the nation. Good luck. But for a while, things seem to be falling into place for David. It's found out that one of the only things that can cure the current king, King Saul, of kind of these dark moods is David's music. And so he's brought into proximity of the current king. He defeats Goliath, kind of an arch nemesis of Israel, in one-on-one combat. And that launches a military career for David, a military career that is so successful that people start singing songs about him. Whatever your field, you know you're successful in it when people start singing songs about you. And they're singing songs about how he's 10 times the warrior that King Saul is. He very quickly becomes best friends with King Saul's son, Jonathan. He marries one of King Saul's daughters, Michal. And look how far he's come from tending sheep in a field. He's so close to the throne. And we can almost imagine how God's going to do it, right? That last few steps. I mean, all we need is for Saul to trip down some stairs or something. Maybe for Jonathan to step aside, and then we're good, we're there. It would not take much. We're so close. But even as it seems like so much has gone right for David, King Saul's become extremely jealous. He sees what's happening. At one point, he even says, what's left for David to take but the throne? He knows how far God has brought David. And that brings us to 1 Samuel 19, verse 11. Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him, that he might kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, told him, "If you do not escape with your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through a window, and he fled away and escaped. And Michal took an image and laid it on the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair at its head and covered it with clothes. Then Saul sent the messengers to see David, saying, "Bring him to me in the bed that I may kill him." And when the messengers came in, behold, the image was in the bed with the pillow of goat's hair at its head. Saul said to Michal, "Why have you deceived me thus? And let my enemy go, so that he has escaped." And Michal answered Saul, "He said to me, 'Let me go, why should I kill you?'" Now David fled and escaped, and he came to Samuel at Ramah, and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and lived in Naoth. This is a turning point for David. Saul has tried to kill David before. Let's be honest about that. But there was always someone there to talk some sense into him, to step in, to intervene, to try and protect David. It always seemed as if it might work out okay. But now there's a resolve and a determination to Saul's actions. And so Saul has David's house watched with the intent to kill David. And Michal warns David. And in one of those small scriptural details that I absolutely love, we see something as if it's out of some sort of slapstick comedy. She's dragging a statue over to the bed. and putting it in and piling some clothes on it and putting this goat's hair pillow in its head, and all so that whoever is watching the house thinks David is still there. Who knows who Saul has on payroll? The servants, whoever else. And as I mentioned, this is a turning point for David. Now remember, in the back of his mind, he can't help but hear the echo of that promise: you will be king over my people Israel. And up to this point, that made a certain amount of sense. He became the people's champion. He became a mighty warrior. He became friends with the king's son, married to the king's daughter, eating at the king's table. But in 24 hours, all that's changed. And he's on the run for his life. And anyone who helps him might lose their life. And what lies ahead? His only companions will be other outlaws, other people on the run. Eventually, he's going to be forced to flee Israel entirely and go live with the Philistines, and probably be branded a traitor by many people as a result. And this is where we find David. I love that picture that was up there a moment ago, because it kind of encapsulates all of this. You've got Saul, who doesn't necessarily think things through too well and has thrown his spear. So now all he can do is pretty much shout about it. There's Jonathan and Michael, who are trying to protect David. There's David looking back at the spear with an expression that I can only think conveys he's just realized how crazy his in-laws actually are. So this is where we find him. But just imagine him that first night after running away, sleeping on the hard ground, cut off from home, cut off from the people he loves. And the thought has to cross his mind: where is God in all this? Now, David has a fair amount of negative traits. We won't list them, but I'm sure some things come to mind. However, there is something in his life, as you read over his story, that just becomes evident and is amazingly positive. And that is that in moments of crisis, in moments of tragedy, in moments even of his own guilt and foolishness, he seems to always quickly and consistently turn back to God. And we see that here. Deprived of his home, on the run for his life, he goes to Samuel, God's prophet. And they live together for a time. And I just imagine them sitting together trying to process through what is happening to David. Not everyone makes this their first move, to pursue God even in confusing times. You see, what sometimes happens is God blesses us with something. He blesses us with money, or with family, or with health, or with a promise that will rule a nation. You know, whatever. And then there comes a time where that thing seems like it's in danger. And it's so easy to feel like God has somehow not held up his end of a bargain. And our first reaction can be to lash out, either to lash out at others, to lash out at where it feels like the danger is coming from, or even to lash out at God for even allowing such things to happen. But David prioritizes pursuing God over pursuing the good thing that God has promised. He prioritizes pursuing God over trying to forcibly claim a promised kingship. When our goal is communion with God, the right path is always the one he guides us down, no matter how long or difficult. So when we prioritize communion with God, and what I mean by that is a close relationship, a connection where we're sharing everything that comes along. It doesn't matter how long or difficult the road is, because the goal is not out there any longer. It's not that thing we're trying to reach. It's not some sort of destination we're waiting on. The goal becomes the relationship with God that we're currently experiencing, currently building, even during hard times. Maybe especially during hard times. If the goal is truly communion with God, one of the reassuring things for me is that the only way to not meet that goal is to let these other things, these difficulties, these circumstances create a barrier between us. As long as I can keep from doing that, as long as I can lean into sharing those even tough experiences with God, then I can't take a misstep. When that's the whole goal. And you find that there's experiences you never dreamed could be redeemed. And experiences you never dreamed God could use to draw you closer to Him. And yet that's exactly what He does. Now it's getting to be wedding season. Maybe you have one to go to this summer. If you do, think about that young couple for a minute. And as you're sitting there and you're watching them and they have all sorts of hopes and dreams for the future and there's joy and it's wonderful and all that is as it should be. But also, if you're married and maybe a few years down the road, you know there's things awaiting them. Challenges, hardships, difficulties. You may not know what form those are going to take, but they'll be there. And you also know that couple will have a choice. To either use those hard times to create barriers, distance, to take those circumstances and launch accusations at one another. Or they will use those same hard times, those same difficulties, those same challenges, those same trials to draw closer to one another. And that's a choice you don't make one time. You make 100 times, 1,000 times. 1,000,000 times over and over. It just makes me think of people, friends, acquaintances, people who have been through the ringer, who life has thrown just everything it can at them, and yet somehow come out of those experiences, having walked through them together with a bond that is almost unshakable. With a bond that is just lifelong. I think there's a natural reaction when we encounter those sorts of situations, those sorts of circumstances, those difficulties, those hardships. There's a natural reaction to wrestle with that, to have questions for God. And He can handle that. He wants you to bring those conversations to Him. He wants you to be able to admit those feelings. But what if also, every once in a while, in the middle of those hardships, we choose to go, Lord, I would love to understand what You're doing here. I would love to see the plan. In fact, let's scrap that and You just get me out of these circumstances. I don't care about the plan, just get me out. What if every once in a while we go, Lord, I would still love to see what you're doing. I'm still really struggling with the place you have me. But Lord, can just give me the strength to set that aside for a moment and just lean my head on your shoulder and just be with you through this and tell you how hard it is. Let's just take a moment to build that kind of relationship. And I know to a certain extent this is a simplification. How could it not be? But I'm trying to describe how we have a choice when encountering hardships to either draw closer to God or to walk away from Him. And people do both. And both are hard. There isn't a path here that's necessarily easy. But if you've watched these situations from the outside, you know one of them turns into something truly beautiful, and one of them turns into something truly tragic. And David chooses to pursue God, to draw closer to God, especially in his time of crisis. When it would feel so easy, it would be so easy to feel betrayed by God. He prioritizes communion with God, prioritizes sharing his experiences with God, especially the hard ones. Now, we have all this in our minds. God's promise to David to make him king. David's steady progress closer and closer to the throne. And then that drastic change of fortune when it all feels like it's ripped away. And how David chooses to use that moment to seek out God. And now, with all of that in mind, I want to turn to Psalm 23. Perhaps the most well-known psalm written by David. And it's familiar. Some of you may even have it memorized. A good chunk of you may even have it memorized. But I find when I keep in mind just the breadth of David's experiences, there are some things that stand out just a little differently. And David begins this way. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. David begins, the Lord is my shepherd. He's the one who takes care of me. He's the one who guides me. He's the one who makes sure I have what I need. He's the one I desperately need to stay close to. And how is he providing what I need? He takes me to pastures and to springs. He makes sure I have food and water. He leads me in paths of righteousness. He takes me on the right path. Why? Because there's something about how he is leading me that says something about God and who he is and what his character is like. There's something about how he is leading me that brings him glory and honor. Do I always see that? No. But he's leading me on these paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. He leads me on these paths of righteousness. He leads me on these right paths. even when the places he's leading me look very, very dark. David just has described a low place where it feels like death is so close that its very shadow is hanging over him. Do you think he felt that way that first night on the run? And I don't know about you, but does that sound like the right path? If I see a valley of the shadow of death, my first instinct is going to say, God, I think we took a wrong turn. We should not be in this neighborhood. Is that really the right path? And David says, it is. Why? Because it's the path that God is leading me down. Because God is my shepherd. Because God is with me. Because he's leading me for his name's sake. And David says, because of all that, I'm not going to fear evil. Now you'll notice it doesn't say evil won't happen to him. It doesn't say bad things won't happen to him. Says he won't be afraid of it. Why? Because God is still with him. He says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Things that David would have been familiar with as a shepherd. The rod used for defense and to drive off predators. The staff used to guide, support, to rescue the sheep, to sometimes correct where they're going. He said, these things are a comfort to me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Once again, David focuses on God's provision. But notice once again here, not everything is good. David says, thank you, Lord, for providing. Thank you for this table that you've laid out. I don't know that you've noticed, I have enemies. Plural. And they're very close. I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting down to eat, I would much rather prefer that a bunch of my enemies weren't hanging out very close at hand. But God still provides, God still guides, even in these dark places. You anoint my head with oil. How could David not think back to the time when he was young and God chose him to be king? And all of this, God's provision, even in the midst of dangerous situations with enemies on every side, David describes as his cup overflowing, as having more than enough. Why? Because the Lord is my shepherd. Because he's walking with God, because he's being guided by God. And he ends this way, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And this is how David ends the psalm. Because you are my shepherd, because you provide for me, even in the low places of death, even when I'm surrounded by enemies, here's what I'm certain of. Your goodness and your mercy is with me. And I'll always be in your presence. This whole thing reminds me of what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 8. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? And what a list. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation. Paul says, I can't think of a single thing in all of creation that could ever separate me from the love. And the overlap between these two both people that experience all sorts of challenges and trials and setbacks and pain and hardship and difficulties, and yet both of whom have an unwavering confidence and certainty in this, that nothing can separate them from the love of God, from His presence. So this is what David learns. The journey God leads him on is longer and harder than he ever could have imagined. But David uses those same trials to draw closer to God. When our goal is communion with God, the right path is always the one He guides us down. No matter how long, no matter how difficult. Maybe you're experiencing a crisis of your own in life. And you say, Paul, that all sounds pretty good, but you just don't understand. You don't understand what's happened. I could sit you down for 5 hours and you still wouldn't understand. You don't understand how earth-shatteringly difficult it is. And you're right. I very likely don't understand. And that's why I think we're being encouraged to cling to the only one who ever can truly understand. The only one who knows you better than you know yourself. The only one who knows your circumstances better than you know them yourself. And maybe it's not necessarily a crisis, but there are just some things in your life that have taken an awful long time to happen. You can identify with David when you feel like God's taking you the long way around. Just realize that the journey that you're on with God, the time that you're taking to build up that relationship and have those experiences together and walk through those things together, is far more important than any destination you may or may not reach. Wherever you are on your journey with God, if we could do something this week, and just a little bit of time each day, can we come back to Psalm 23 and just read through it? And think about what David was going through, and think about what you're going through in your own life. It takes about 30 seconds to read. I timed it. Means if you have 5 minutes, you can read it 10 times. But just take some time to sit in those words and ask yourself, what does it mean for God to be my shepherd? How do I see Him providing in my life? How can the paths He is guiding me down and the way I am responding to those paths He is guiding me down bring honor and glory to His name? Where in my life does it feel like there are dark valleys where death's shadow is close at hand? How is God causing my cup to overflow even in hard circumstances? How can I rest in His goodness and mercy, safe in the assurance that I am His and He is mine and nothing can separate that? And just to get a jump start on this week, I want to close by reading Psalm 23 one more time. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord. How long, church?
Forever.
Lord, you know what I'm describing here today. It's not going to be possible for us to do without the strength of your Spirit. Lord, would you just help us to lean on you and to rely on you? Lord, as we see people struggling within your body, within the community, within the church, Lord, would we draw near to them, not just as ourselves, they don't need us in that moment, but as your hands and feet, as your love. Lord, as individuals, as a church, would we just lean into a deeper relationship with you? Lord, take whatever we are going through in our lives, the good, the bad, everything in between. And would it just be fuel for a deeper love of you? In your Son's name I pray. Next week, I know Jonas is going to be joining us from Germany, so we're looking forward to that. So we're going to have a quick preview, looking ahead, and then you all are dismissed. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Monday.